Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
From the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. We just had the president of the University of Missouri resign, largely because the football team decided that they wouldn't play otherwise. But the incidents that occurred at the University of Missouri might be a grown-up form of bullying. They were basically students and faculty going around with racist taunts and making things very uncomfortable for the students and faculty of the University of Missouri. Obviously, bullying is far greater than at the university level. In fact, it tends to begin at the elementary school level. And it's something that it's hard, I think, for some people to understand. Most of us have been through bullying as kids, but trying to know really what causes it, I think, may be the best way to learn how to prevent it. My guest today is Jonathan Fast. He's associate professor at the Verzweiler School, I hope I'm getting that name right, of social work at Yeshiva University. Dr. Fast, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark.
Did I pronounce that right?
Very close. It's Wurzweiler.
Wurzweiler. Okay, no, I massacred it, but that's all right. So, Dr. Fast, you study social work. You study bullying. My understanding is a lot of bullying behavior begins because the bullies themselves feel bullied, rather maybe at home, or maybe because they feel inadequate or some sort of way. Is that a fair, rough understanding of bullying, or is it more complex than that?
Well, I think that's one of the principles involved, is that the bully has accumulated a great deal of shame and has no way to manage it. So shame has to be managed.
So and shame... Shame is the cause. It's shame from family, shame from other kids, shame from self-esteem anywhere?
Yeah, I imagine it mostly comes from the family and the community.
Okay, so people are telling kids they're not good enough.
Right.
And so they are taking it out on others. My best example of bullying is you got three sons, and the older son picks on the middle child, and the middle child is can't stand up to the older brother, so he picks on his little brother. Is that sort of, again, I don't mean to simplify it too much, but the heart of what's going on here?
Well, I think it's pretty simple like that. That is what happens, or else the two older brothers pick on the smaller brother, which was a
together
case that someone was just talking to me about. And then the smaller brother... The it's a really bad situation when the victim of the bullying doesn't have a way to manage the shame.
And so then maybe the little brother then grows up to be an abuser himself.
Yes. Well, actually, the victim grows up to be just a depressed and anxious person, usually, according to the research done by Dan Olwis, who is sort of the authority on this kind of thing. He's done more research than anyone on bullying.
So humans have been picking on each other probably for hundreds of thousands of years. What can we do to stop people from bullying each other?
Well, the first thing we need to do is to be able to recognize shame when it happens, because the discussion of shame is forbidden in our culture, in the dominant culture. You know, people used to say there are three things that you can never talk about, and they're sex, money, and politics. But now we're talking about sex, money, and politics. There are really are two things that we can never talk about in public, and one of them is shame, and the other is social status. And if you think about it, it's very unlikely that you've ever had a conversation about any of those two things.
Well, that's why we're bringing you here on the air.
Tell me
about shame, because it's not a word, frankly, that you hear often in public. People try to shame others, I guess, with their behavior. One could argue that when I call out the Republicans in their debate, and I say the things that they lied about, I'm practicing a form of shame. I think they can probably handle it. But what is shame?
Well, shame is the fear that your membership in a group is going to become tenuous, or that you're going to try to join a group of higher status and be rejected.
This is interesting because, baboons, they study this kind of social behavior. I guess we're not that different from other primates.
No, except, of course, the love of bananas and swinging through trees.
I like bananas and I like trees, so maybe I haven't evolved at all. But I'm trying to understand here. So a group sets certain standards, I guess, and that group could be the family, could be the peer group. And someone is shamed because they fail to meet up to those standards, or they think they're going to fail to meet up to those standards?
Right. Well, we don't think of them as standards too often. They're just the culture of the family, the culture of the school. So, for example, if you're in an Orthodox Jewish family and you decide to marry a Gentile, you can actually get kicked out of the family for that. So that
ostracized.
Would be an example. And then you would feel terrible shame for losing your membership in the family. But the problem is that you wouldn't really know exactly what you were feeling, because we never identify the feeling of shame very well.
So maybe if we recognized what we were feeling and recognized that, I'm feeling bad because this group doesn't like me or doesn't think I met their when I say standards, I don't mean that it's necessarily a good thing. I just mean their criteria, whatever it is.
Right.
Maybe if I recognized that that's why I was feeling so bad, I could say, well, I don't need those people anyway, and go join another group of people that don't have those standards.
Right. Of course, it's not so simple to join a group of people who are going to replace your family.
It's not, but I'll tell you something, Doctor, and I say this as someone who came out as gay about 20 years ago, a little more than 20 years ago now. I know many, many people, particularly in the 90s. It actually doesn't happen so much anymore, thank God. But certainly when I came out in the early 90s, there were lots of people who were kicked out of their homes. Not me, but others. And they literally were forced out of their family. And they had to find a new family, and often that was the gay or lesbian community. I assume that kind of being forced out of peer groups and families occurs all the time.
Right, and that's a terrible amount of shame comes with being gay. But now things are much better. I mean, I'm happy to be living at this time in history, when I can actually see gay people getting accepted as part of society and not having to hide.
It's I'd argue we're even cool amazing. Now, Doctor, but it wasn't that way 20 years ago.
No.
Help me understand. Somebody, because we've all been there, at least I have. I think most people can remember a time in grammar school. I had last had my last fight in fifth grade. It was somebody who, a bigger kid, who was taunting me all the time. And finally, I actually got the courage to hit him back, and I think it's my father. It was a whole story. It's like one of those made-for-TV movies after school. But I don't know what his issues were. And actually, thinking about it now, maybe I can probably think about it. His parents were very well educated. This kid was not doing well in school. I was doing well in school. Maybe he was attacking the person that his parents wanted him to be. Is that sort of a standard bullying technique?
Can you remember what he was taunting you about mostly?
I I think it was he was thought I was afraid to fight. And I kind of was, but I finally got up the courage to do so.
You were afraid to what?
I was afraid to fight him. Was sort of his taunt. Again, this is back when I was 10 years old. You're bringing up painful memories, Doctor. I may have to lie on your couch for a little while. As I recall, that's what it was. And all the kids in the schoolyard at one point were shouting, fight, fight, fight. And I walked away from the fight at first. And then finally, like I said, got up the courage to... I only hit him once, and he
that
stopped bothering
it.
Me.
So what he was doing was he was commenting on your courage and your macho. Your
I guess that's what he was, probably,
and
yeah.
So what happens when you're bullied in that way is there's a little part of your brain that thinks, well, maybe I'm not so macho, maybe I'm not
yeah,
so
Yeah, he was
courageous.
A head taller than me. I didn't know that I could hit him. I was afraid, I admit it.
Okay, well, nobody's accusing you of
anything. It's okay. I'm over it now, Doctor. I think I'm okay now.
Okay, so here's the point, though. There are certain things that are very, very basic to our identity, like our gender and our intelligence and our maturity. And those are the things that we typically get bullied about when we're little kids. And the process of being bullied, in the process, we create a second version of ourselves, who is the immature version. You know, someone shouting at you, you know, you're a baby, you're a baby. Part of you, a little bit of you, is thinking, well, maybe I am a baby. Maybe I'm not the mature person that I thought I was. And so this second identity, you get a kind of a divided self, and that's one of the things that is so painful. And it really hurts to think that maybe, you know, your who you are comes into question.
I'll
so
tell
you, if you know that, you can handle it better.
I'm really glad we have a full hour to discuss this because I want to think about it both from the perspective of the victim and from the perspective of actually three perspectives: the
mm-hmm.
perspective of the victim, the perspective of the bully, and the perspective of the person in charge, whether it be a teacher or principal or society or laws at large. I'm about to enter the House of Delegates in Virginia, so if there are laws that I can pass, the people in charge, how should they stop bullying? How can we convince bullies not to bully? And how can we convince victims to either stand up for themselves or otherwise not feel the shame of being bullied? These are tough questions, and that's why I've got you on to answer these questions. We've got to take a break, though. When we come back, we'll try to answer these questions. This is Mark Levine, right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I'm talking with Dr. Jonathan Fast. He's an associate professor at the Wurzweiler School of Social Work at Yeshiva University. He's been working on a research project for almost 7 years now, focusing on the role of shame in different kinds of violent bullying behavior. His book, it's his second book, but the book on bullying is called Beyond Bullying. You can get it at Oxford University Press. I'm sure you can get it online. It examines how racism, domestic violence, homophobia are some ways to handle or actually mishandle unexamined shame. Dr. Fast, welcome back to the show. So before the break, I talked about sort of the three prongs of this: bully, victim, and authorities. I want to start with the bully because I guess that's the source here. We talked about how the bully might bully because of shame. What is going through the bully's mind? Because you said this is unexamined shame.
Well, if you talk to bullies, you know, school bullies, school age bullies, and you ask them why they're bullying so and so, you typically get answers like, "Well, just because I hate him, because he represents everything I hate," you know. And it's crazy because he doesn't represent anything except
he's
himself,
just a kid.
Usually,
yeah.
But he comes to represent everything the guy hates because he displaces his shame onto the victim.
So if you hate weakness, you might attack someone you perceive as weak.
If you hate your own weakness.
Right. If you think you're not smart enough, you might attack someone who you perceive as dumb. If you think you're not pretty enough, you might attack someone who you think is ugly. That kind of thing.
Yeah, you want to choose your victim carefully. You want to choose a victim who's not going to punch you right back because then... the whole purpose of the thing is defeated. You want to get someone who is smaller and weaker than you are and someone who's not terribly popular.
And again, shame isn't always about physical force. It could be about someone who, like I said, is you who you could attack for being either dumb or for being not pretty. If you're a girl, maybe if that's important to you, or someone who's even not good at some skill that you're good at, whether it's playing music or whatever. You're attacking someone who lacks the thing that you feel you lack. Is that right?
Well, yes, but you can just imagine that they do. It doesn't have to be someone who actually lacks the skill.
Right, right.
It's just someone who's vulnerable.
So how do you get the bully to change their minds and recognize that bullying isn't making them any better or more popular or more successful? It's just making them into a jerk. How do you persuade a bully?
Well, the only thing I've seen that's had a high level of success is to create a culture of restorative processes within the school, and it's got to be throughout the school. And what happens is the bully is confronted by his classmates, you know, representatives of the community, of the school community, and by the victim of the bullying, if it's safe for him to do so, and they confront him and they tell him that he's behaving like a jerk. And they point out to him how offensive what he's doing is. And he doesn't get it typically. He doesn't get it the first time, and he doesn't.
I would think he'd feel bullied if the first time, you're ganging up on me. It's kind of like when you try to do what's the word I'm looking for? When someone's been drinking too much. Intervention, right.
Yeah.
And you go and you say, hey, you're drinking too much, you're hurting your family, and that might lead the person initially to drink more because they can't handle the pressure.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
Your experience with it may be different from
mine. No, I've never done an intervention. I'm just guessing. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
But with the bullying, I mean, typically what happens is the first time the person just doesn't buy it. But eventually they do, and it may require four or five confrontations of that kind.
Is there a way to help a bully save face? After all, they are worried about shame. They don't want to be seen in some bad light, and actually you're showing them in a bad light for their bullying. Is there a way to help them save face and feel like they're part of the community again if they'd only stop bullying, to show not just the stick, as it were, but the love, too?
Well, I think the nature of that kind of confrontation is that, and you have to have a trained facilitator to do this because it is a little bit difficult, is to bring the person into the community. That's called reintegrative shaming or healthy shaming. And the idea is that you can teach a person to adapt the culture of the community, which in this case is to behave respectfully to everyone. And that's reintegrative shaming. That's the use of a positive use of shame.
So the goal is to make them feel like if they continue to be a bully, that's shameful and more shameful than whatever it was causing them to attack in the first place.
And that's isolating them from the culture and making them unpopular.
Because after all, is that the heart of what bullying is about, trying to be popular?
No, I think it's about not being able to manage the shame in a healthy way.
Okay. All right, got to take another break, Doctor. When we come back, I want to focus on the victim and what the victim can or should do to protect themselves from this. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this. Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about bullying in the schoolyard, bullying in life. What causes bullies to act the way they do? Dr. Jonathan Fast, my guest, the associate professor at the Wurzweiler School of Social Work at Yeshiva University, has written a book, Beyond Bullying, where he explains that basically it's mismanaged or unexamined shame that causes the bully to bully. But what if you're a victim? What if someone is bullying you? Again, it could be in the schoolyard. It could be in your workplace. We all know colleagues at work that mistreat us. It could be someone who is a friend of a friend of yours, or someone who's just an acquaintance that doesn't like you very much because of their own unexamined shame. What do you do if you're the victim? Dr. Fast, what do you do?
Well, if you're in a school or an institution, it's the responsibility of the school or the institution to keep you safe and to keep a genial enough atmosphere so that you can learn. You know, if you're fearful all day, you can't learn. So primarily, it's the responsibility of the institution.
So you go to your teacher, you go to your principal.
Right, and if they don't do anything, which is what happens in a number of cases because they'd rather not get involved in this aspect of it, then your parents may sue the school, you may be transferred to another school, and if the bullying continues, I would not hesitate to tell parents to homeschool a child.
Wow.
I've met children who were homeschooled to avoid being bullied because they were, they had some quality about them that made other kids so anxious that they would bully them. And they're just terrific. They came out great.
Yeah, so but it's bad that any school would allow such a thing. Recently, Doctor, the University of Missouri, I'm sure you heard about it, the president had to resign. In that school, there was a lot of bullying going around. It wasn't physical bullying, but it was very hateful bullying. Lots of students being called the N-word, faculty apparently being taunted with racial taunts, and then the ultimate, some presumably mentally ill someone actually using human excrement to draw a swastika on the dorm wall. What should the president and university officials have done to respond to this conduct?
Oh, boy. That's a big question. I don't actually know what kind of power the university president has, but
he could have set a tone. He could have given a speech.
He could have said,
"I'm going to find the people who did this and expel
right.
them if they're students and prosecute
right.
them if they're not." I mean, you don't have a right to use human excrement in that way, I'm sure.
Right. No. So I'm thinking of a similar situation that occurred in UCLA last year or 2 years ago, although not quite so horrid as this. And the first thing they do is they put out a public statement that says this: we will not tolerate this, and we're going to do everything within our power to correct it. Now, I think what might have made this difficult in the University of Missouri, it was the extent of it. I don't think I've heard of too many situations like this that have gone this far. And so that might have caused problems.
Now, yeah. So yeah. I guess the goal is to stop it while it's simmering before it becomes a fire.
Right.
To take a strong stance against the first two or three incidents so that it doesn't become 20 or 30.
Right. Because when a culture is under a lot of stress, they can easily go into a bullying mood where everyone in the culture is thinking, damn, this would have never happened if we hadn't done A or if we hadn't done B. And, of course, the great example of that is Germany, after signing this humiliating treaty after World War I, everyone was easily convinced that it was the presence of outsiders, of people outside, non-German people in the country that were responsible for them losing World War I. And in World War II, everyone was eager to go about a campaign of removing all the non-Germans from the country.
And thus we created a nation of bullies, millions and millions of bullies, entire country.
That's what happens with fascism.
One could argue that Japan actually was the same way, that Japan, which actually America, Admiral Perry invaded with his ships in the 1840s. He wanted to trade with Japan. Japan didn't want to trade with him. He used gunships, which they didn't have in Japan, to force them to let the Americans land. And that shame, interesting, now that I'm putting it all into context, you're helping with this, Doctor, that shame largely caused them to build up industrially to compete with the West and to cause World War II. So I guess it makes sense at the macro level as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good example.
So let me ask you about cyberbullying, which is, I guess, the 21st century way to bully.
Yeah.
We have kids that pretend to be someone on Facebook or mock other kids or people or adults and shame them, sometimes anonymously, because the Internet allows you to do that. How is the best way? Let's say that one of my listeners is being cyberbullied. How should someone respond?
Well, it's great if you can get the person to get offline. so that they're not victimized by it. It's very hard to control. And one of the things that software makers are looking at now is some way to prevent this from happening.
But isn't that kind of running? I mean, you know, why should the victim have to leave Facebook because the bully is taunting the victim? I mean, that seems kind of unfair.
It is unfair, and we're in the early stages of a new technology, and stuff like this is going to happen. So the first thing you want to do is you want to protect the person who's getting assaulted. So you just try and get them out of the situation. The problem is that internet is everywhere, and kids particularly feel a real need to be involved with their social society, with their community.
Is there a way to fight back online, to shame the bully, to do what you called reintegrative shaming, or I may have got the name wrong, but
yeah.
to do that kind of intervention through the web? I mean, maybe you know who it is. It's a colleague at work who is spreading, you know, lies about you, or just making, you know, making mincemeat out of, you know, oh, you took 20 minutes extra on your lunch hour or whatever. You're trying to get under your skin. Is there a way to fight back using the web?
Well, you can contact the people who run run Facebook, for example. And you can get them to, you know, they'll be responsive. But, you know, it's like this. Was it Charybdis, where whenever you cut off a head, he'd grow another one?
Yeah, and it's not always racism, anti-Semitism, and homophobia and misogyny. Sometimes it's just people are jerks and they pick on people for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
And it's just, it'd be curious to. I guess the main thing is expose the bully as a bully, and hopefully the community will rally behind you. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's taking a risk.
The problem, Mark, is that you don't even know who it is.
Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't.
And if it's one person who seems to be having a good time tormenting someone, then a bunch of other people may also come and pretend to be the same person. It's really devastating. And a number of kids that I talk about in Beyond Bullying have actually been driven to suicide.
Right. I was just going to bring that up. So
yeah.
if a parent of a, let's say, 13-year-old is being bullied, what should the parent do? What should they advise their child? What should the child do? I mean, I think it's really you tell a kid to get off Facebook. And it's kind of like telling a kid you can't have candy for the rest of your life. I just don't know that that's a meaningful solution.
You know, there will be solutions to this, but right now I don't think there are any good solutions. I think
so. That's what we're facing. That's the hardest thing right now.
Yeah, I would like to tell you something. To have a silver bullet for this, but it's just, you know, it's anonymous. It's relational bullying. It's spreading rumors.
Yeah.
There's no way to stop this. And as the tension and the anxiety of being a child keep on increasing, this is the way you get rid of it, is by scapegoating and bullying other people. This is one way. I should say this is one way, and this is the worst way to get rid of it.
I wonder if ignoring the bully is a good technique. In other words, bullies take pleasure in watching the victim flinch or back off or feel bad. And if you simply ignore the bullying, if you're able to, again, you can't ignore a physical threat, but you could ignore a taunt on a cyber attack, you know, a cyber threat, a bullying. You could ignore that, and maybe if you ignore it for long enough, some bullies go away. I think so.
But now, what about your position as a moderator here and a voice of liberal politics? Do you ever get bullied?
Oh, I get bullied all the time.
Is there one guy who's a particular bully?
I get bullied in different ways. I get bullied. Bullied is kind of when I have. I go on Fox News and I talk to a right winger, and I will get a torrid of responses, mostly very juvenile, you know, libtard or you know whatever. Sometimes they're anti-Semitic, sometimes they're homophobic, but most of them don't even know I'm gay, and that doesn't really faze me. I ignore them and they go away and taunt the next person. I find that the only kind of bullying that really hurts is when it's someone you care about. You know, that if you like someone, or it's a family member or someone that you have to see every day because you work with them, that's to me a lot more painful than some attack from some stranger who really doesn't know me or that doesn't faze me at all.
So you're on an equal footing with Bill O'Reilly, for example, not to mention.
Well, I don't know that I'm on an equal footing. I don't quite have my own show watched. I mean, I love my radio audience, but I don't think it's the several millions that he has every day.
Yeah, but just in terms of your command of facts, your ability to debate things.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He doesn't scare me at all.
So it's not really bullying. It's like a duel.
Right. Oh, I enjoy debating Bill O'Reilly because
right.
I do. I feel like it's a battle of wits. And also, he doesn't make it personal. I'll give you someone who did, though. Sean Hannity, rather than attacking with facts, would just basically attack me with insults. And finally, I stopped appearing on his show. Because rather than fight fact with fact, the way Bill O'Reilly does, whom I respect, Sean Hannity would just fight fact with insults. And I would say that on the air. I would say, look, you know, an ad hominem attack, Sean, just means that you're agreeing with me because you can't fight me with facts. And then he turned my mic down. And I was like, so I was on his show several dozen times, and I told them about a year ago I wasn't going to do it anymore. Just because it wasn't productive. I wasn't getting my facts out. He was just insulting me. And to the extent that his audience followed the insult rather than the facts, I didn't really feel they were persuadable either. So I guess there is a difference then.
Sure.
Hey, thanks for coming on the air, Doctor, and explaining this. You actually helped me really clarify some aspects of bullying in my own mind and probably in my listeners too. So I really appreciate you coming here on the Inside Scoop.
It's my pleasure.
When I come back, I'll talk about some of those personal incidents of bullying. I think it's a good thing to do, and I'm glad Dr. Fast brought it up. Really, really interesting discussion. We'll be right back to conclude right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Sorry there are no phone calls today. The phone system's down, but I've really enjoyed my discussion with Dr. Jonathan Fast, associate professor at Yeshiva University. He really helped me think about bullying. Now, I had thought about it before. I told you, I told him that when I think of bullying, I think of big brother attacking middle brother who turns around and expresses his anger on little brother. And in essence, that's what he's saying writ large, that it's about shame. It's about people feeling inadequate. They're often the ones that are attacking others. And sometimes they grow up to do it themselves. You find, unfortunately, a lot of the worst domestic abuse is done by kids who were abused themselves. Father hits child. Child grows up to hit his son or his daughter. And it's obviously a major problem. It's interesting that in the new front, in cyberbullying, it gets even harder because the bully can be anonymous. Actually, one solution that's come up is if you're going to deal with, I guess, the technology of bullying today, you might as well go after it with technology. There's, in fact, an app called No App, or The No App, to be exact, THENO-APP, The No App, that you can get, I guess, at least on your iPhone, that if a kid feels they're being bullied, they press a button on their phone or their computer, it immediately alerts their parents, and this is the really scary part of the No App, it turns the internal camera on the bully's phone or the bully's computer around and starts filming them so that everyone is aware that they were told to stop. And if they continue, well, I guess it puts the shame back on the bully. Now, I worry about cyber warfare because I worry that someone will design some other cyber weapon to fight back. But for the moment, that seems to be an interesting way to confront a bully. After all, the real thing that stops a bully is others knowing about it. Most bullies, I think, taunt their victims and say, "You better not tell anyone." Well, why are they saying that? They're saying that because they know if someone does tell, they're in trouble. You know, don't be a tattletale, except the fact that I'm hitting you and taking your lunch money, or that I'm taunting you in front of other schoolmates, or that I'm calling you racist or homophobic or anti-Semitic, anti-Muslim names. just accept it. So it seems to me that one of the best ways to confront bullies is to simply turn it around. It's funny. I guess I really haven't been bullied much since grammar school. But I do remember coming out when I stood in line. This is in Los Angeles. It was a couple years after I came out of the closet. And I was standing in line at a gay bar with, I don't know, 40 or 50 other young gay men. And some yahoos came by in a pickup truck and started shouting slurs at us. You know, the F word, to use the anti-gay slur. And the response in our group was to laugh. And a couple guys, kind of large gay men with well-muscled, ran after the truck, and the truck peeled off. And everyone just laughed. And I thought, what power is that? To laugh at the bully. Now, to be fair, this was in West Hollywood, California. This was, if anything, the gay capital of America. There was a lot of safety in numbers, and there were 40 of us and only 3 or 4 of them. It's very, very different, obviously, and this was around that time, when you're one small gay kid in Laramie, Wyoming, and two guys taunt you and eventually crucify you and kill you. That, of course, is Matthew Shepard. So I understand that context matters. But if you can rally others to your cause, that to me is the best way to stop bullying. And a lot of people don't like bullies. A lot of people don't like bullies. I admit, I kind of enjoy bullying bullies, and I think it's a fair thing to do. You know, some of that reintegrative shame, I think was the word that Dr. Fast used. That's essence what we did in standing in line at the gay bar. We mocked the shamers. And a lot of times I'll do that. You know, if someone comes on my show and challenges me and asks a fair question and says, Mark, I think you're wrong, and let me tell you why, we're going to have a great discussion. And you know that. You listen to my show, you know people who disagree with me could be right-wingers, could be people to my left. Whatever it is, people who disagree with me come on the air, they give their reasons, I give my reasons. We have great debates. That's why I'm on radio. That's what it's all about. But if someone comes on my show and calls me names or says idiotic things or won't have a discussion, a back and forth, a give and take, well, you know, it's my show. Click, goodbye. I don't do it often. Most people aren't in that category. Generally, I can shame someone into using logic, and I do it the same way I did it with Sean Hannity. I say, look, if you're doing an ad hominem attack, a personal attack, an insult, that's clear evidence that you don't know what you're talking about. Because if you knew what you were talking about, you would use facts. You would use logic. My argument is vulnerable to logic. If I say something and you show that I'm logically wrong, or you present some fact that I can check up that's true, that shows I'm wrong, I'll admit I'm wrong, and you'll win the debate. But if you come on air and you're just going to call me names, to me, that belittles you. That's like those guys in the pickup truck. That makes you look silly. It makes you look stupid because you can't attack my facts. You're just calling names. Anyone can call anyone else a name. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't give power. It doesn't make you look good. It makes you look bad. If you're just going to call someone a name, it is you who are weak. It is you who is feeling shame, Dr. Fast would tell us. It is you who needs some help. And I'm all for reintegrating bullies. I'm all for bringing them back in the fold. Perhaps by bullying bullies a bit, we can use their own shame to bring them back into society. The boy I had a fight with in fifth grade, 4 years later, and this was weird to me, asked me, I got a call from a teacher. He wanted to go to my high school, and he mentioned me as a friend of his. And I was shocked. I couldn't believe he was basically asking for a recommendation from me, the kid that he bullied for a full year before I finally hit back. I remember telling the truth to that teacher, telling the whole history of the fifth grade, and being oddly satisfied that, I guess that I'd made it. And in the end of the day, I said, you know what? I think he's a good kid, and I think he's been reformed. And isn't that the hope for all bullies? This is Mark Levine. Hope you enjoyed the show. Talk to you tomorrow.